Well, it took us 25 minutes to say the governor's name, but we are on to Romney, so how do you feel about his chances in November and the overall outlook for November, including the House and the Senate?
Well, I think the polls will bear out that this will continue to be a very close election. As we left a few weeks ago from Washington, D.C., it was pretty much neck and neck, depending on which poll you read. There was some slippage in the Romney campaign. I think you mentioned the 47%. I don't think that helped him. But from everything that I'm reading right now, it seems like there was a bit of a jolt of enthusiasm after the debate last night. I actually didn't have a chance to see it. We were flying out of the bush last evening, but I believe that Romney is still very, very much in the game. And I said as much the day before yesterday at the state chamber. I think Romney would be better for this state, and I think Romney would be better for the country than President Obama. And I am one who was very willing to give President Obama a chance. I knew him from our days in the Senate together. I like him as an individual. But I look at these past 4 years, and I am not convinced that we are better off to be in a situation where we have had unemployment above 8% for the longest period of time since World War II, where our economic growth is below 2%, where the buying power of an individual's paycheck is dramatically reduced. I look at these and I say, this is not good stuff. This is not good for our country. And Alaska's not so insulated. We're not so far away that we're not impacted by that. So I think that the president made a calculated move in the very early days of his administration to focus on a healthcare agenda that was driving him, and not to suggest that healthcare did not need to be addressed, but when he put that front and center ahead of jobs, when there were millions and millions of Americans unemployed, I don't think that set his administration on the right track, and I think he's been trying to kind of dig out from it ever since.
Okay, what could have been done that wasn't done either by the president or Congress in the last 4 years to speed up this recovery?
Well, when you're in a hole, the first thing you want to do is to stop digging. We are in a hole from a fiscal perspective. When you're sitting at $17 trillion, close to $17 trillion in debt, you don't want to add more to it. Part of the problem that we are facing is it's not only spending on the discretionary side, it's the growth of the entitlement system. I don't care whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, there is agreement that we've got a system that is not sustainable. And we may disagree on how we correct it, but the agreement is it's not sustainable. We got to fix it. And so instead of addressing the spending side or the entitlements or tax reform, which in and of itself could have been huge in helping to correct the imbalance that we're seeing right now, instead the president embarked on implementing and instituting yet another entitlement. And that's the health care reform law. So what could have been done? You could have addressed Medicare. You could have addressed tax reform. We're going to have to do them all now.
What kind of tax reform are you referring to?
Well, I happen to be one who believes that the Simpson-Bowles proposal that was presented now 18 months or so ago, maybe even more than that, is one that is worthy of our consideration. It's actually now back on the table as a, I won't call it a default option because I'm not part of the conversations that are ongoing now, but the president had asked for an assessment from Simpson Bowles. I think he got a very fair blueprint for how we might move forward, and it included tax reform. It included there were provisions in it that. That addressed how we deal with Medicare. It was increasing, ratcheting up the age criteria over a period of time. There is a change to it as it relates to Social Security through the CPI, through the cost of living index. But there was also tax reform that was included in it. And I realize when you talk about tax reform, capital T, capital R, the devil is always in the details. But and with Simpson Bowles, keep in mind, it's a situation where we're not just calling for reductions in spending. It does allow for increased revenue.
Yes.
And I am one who believes that you can't cut your way out of this. You can't tax your way out of this. But you can't say where there is no way that we cannot address the revenue side of it. And there are some of my colleagues who are just absolute on that. They just won't even talk to you.
How about Congressman Ryan, for one?
Well, I tell you, you know, he has taken a lot of heat for his plan. What I admire about Paul Ryan is that he had the guts to put a plan out there, to stand up in front of all the critics and say, yeah, you know, this is tough medicine, but what do you have to offer? What do you have to offer? And this was where we got kind of radio silence from the administration. Not only would they not put forward their own plan, but they wouldn't back the Simpson-Bowles Commission, the very commission that they had encouraged to go out and kind of help them lead the way. Mm-hmm. Let them take the hits, and you know they can figure out what vetted well and what didn't. So I'll tell you, I didn't vote for the Ryan plan when it first came out. I thought he went too directly after Medicare. So I didn't vote for it. But at the time that I did that, I also said, you know, kudos for him for stepping forward. Okay. Not too many people that are going to be willing to take down the chin.
Right. I have, I hate to pull us off this road and back to another one, but
oh,
I
want
to get back to some Southeast policy.
Okay.
We talked to Congressman Young last weekend and asked him about his Sea Alaska bill, and then we asked him, what does he think will happen in the Senate? And his answer was, you'll have to ask the Senate.
Oh.
So, what's going to happen with Sea Alaska this week?
Well, as you know, we have been in negotiations with the Forest Service, with Sea Alaska, with various interest groups, Senator Bingaman, and his staff as the chair of the Energy Committee has been engaged down to the finest detail, which is a little bit surprising because typically when an issue is so unique to a specific state, you won't have other members really kind of get in and try to lead or take over on certain issues. And the chairman and his staff have been very involved in the minutia of this bill. So it's been somewhat torturous, but I do believe that we've got a better product. I do believe that we have a product that has been far more responsive to the concerns of the people in the areas, those who are worried about conservation, those that are worried about access, those that are worried about the prospect for timber jobs, those that are fishermen who are concerned. I really think that we have a proposal that really does listen and take into account the concerns of all the stakeholders that are out there. So having said that, where are we in the process? We're going into a lame duck session the 13th of November, and we're going to have basically 5 weeks to figure out what we're going to do with everything from taxes to sequestration to fiscal cliff to, you know, who knows, maybe we even take up law of the sea treaty. And in the midst of all this, there's a lot of us that have these public lands bills that we would like to get through. I don't know whether it's going to be possible to do. I really don't. And I don't have a crystal ball in that. The last time we did a public lands bill, it was a big package. It was comprised of wasn't quite 100, but I think it was 80 bills. It's hard to do. And I'll just explain why it's hard. What we've been trying to do is get a smaller package so that it doesn't die on its own weight. But when you put together a group of, say, 14 bills, all public lands bills from different parts of the country, you have another senator who says, well, wait a minute, my little land exchange that is germane only to us here in Arizona, I need to have mine put on that package too. And by the way, if you don't put that on my package, I'm going to torpedo your package. I'm going to put a hold on it, and we're not going to go anywhere. And so we get engaged in this standoff situation, which doesn't help anybody. It doesn't help anybody. So we're in the position now, me and Senator Bingaman, trying to discern whether or not we're able to put together a package that would include Sea Alaska. But at this point in time, I can't give you any degree of confidence in terms of what may happen with it. Now, as you know, the measure that Senator or Congressman Young has advanced has gone through a very different process. He basically passed out the bill that he had introduced. It doesn't have the same level of comment and input that we have generated. So if we are able to get a bill passed in the Senate, you do have the House version, which would be very different. And so how we would move from there to reconcile the differences. Would the House take up our bill? I'd like to think they would, but even that is not certain.
Tsunami debris and mm-hmm. funding, I know mm-hmm. you addressed it in the roundtable. I'd like you to just kind of, if you could, talk about what efforts are underway right now in Washington regarding that. The $50,000, I think a lot of people up here. Well, I mean, I think you were quoted as, can you record me rolling my eyes? Is that?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that kind of sums up what a lot of people thought when they heard $50,000.
Yeah, $50,000 isn't going to get us.
I'm especially interested in Yakutat. You mentioned they're having particular issues up there. Have you been up there
yeah,
to see it?
I have. So the various federal efforts that are underway in the Interior Appropriations Bill, which I mentioned, we just released the language. We've included report language that that outlines a essentially a task force, a federal task, not necessarily federal, but the affected agencies to come together to create a task force to deal with this, because what we understand with the tsunami debris is it's just the beginning of what we're seeing. They say it could take several years before we really see it move through all of the currents and land on our shores. Obviously, a great deal of the debris has already sunk, but there is more coming our way. So knowing that, what's the plan? What's the plan? So we want, I've directed that we put a task force in place. Now, the federal dollars, as I mentioned, there's been $250,000 that has come from NOAA to be divided evenly among the 50 states. So Alaska has 50,000. The Japanese government announced last month that they would advance $6 million, $5 million to each of the affected states, and $1 million to Canada and British Columbia. It is, it's most appreciated by that the Japanese have stepped forward to assist this way. But again, these dollars are not going to be sufficient for us here in Alaska. I anticipate that just given the nature of our coasts, where we are with the currents, and the extent of our coastline, that we're going to bear the brunt of it. And the cleanup is going to be dramatically more expensive. Think about the Washington and the Oregon coast. You can drive that whole coast. You can pretty much see the coast from wherever you are on that highway. You can't do that here in Southeast. It's just not possible. So how we engage in the cleanup is going to be difficult. Some of the communities have stepped right up. They're not going to wait around for a federal agency to come in and say, okay, we're here to clean up. They want to get the styrofoam, the buoys, the plastics that are washing up on their beach off. Yakutat is a great example. I was out in March, and that was when the very first of the debris was hitting the beach. They had brought in some of the bigger blue buoys that we're now starting to see. Since that time, the people in Yakutat have done a pretty ambitious effort to just go out there. Instead of beachcombing, they're hauling in what they're seeing. And I was visited by some of the tribal officials this summer, and they had pictures and a PowerPoint of what they had collected to date. The concern is that this is big, bulky stuff. This is the stuff that's riding high on the waves. It's the buoys, it's the big pieces of styrofoam, we haven't seen much in the way of big containers, but it's big stuff. Yakutat, like so many of our coastal island communities, has a very limited landfill. They cannot put more in their landfill. So what do they do? So we're looking for some creative solutions to what might be done. One of the things that I think is kind of interesting, Yakutat pays an extraordinary amount for their fuel. When I was out there in March, you know, they're $6-7. They're looking for whatever energy solutions they can find. I was up at the Renewable Energy Fair in Chino Hot Springs last summer, and I saw a machine that is probably about as big as these washer and dryers stacked on top of one another. And it's a plastics to fuel, and you literally take plastic and you stuff it in one end, and out the other end comes fuel. It's like something out of, you know, Dr. Gizmo's science freak show. But just to demonstrate what they had done, and we stuffed in plastics and garbage and stuff, and the stuff comes out the other end, and they took it outside and they put it in a car and they powered that car. It wasn't just make believe. And so I called up Bernie Carl and I said, Bernie, you know that plastics to fuel gizmo thing that that Japanese company was selling, do you think that could work for something like this? And you know, Bernie's a dreamer. He's not afraid to take on big challenges and think big.
Who is Bernie again?
Bernie Carl is the owner of Chino Hot Springs. Okay. He's got a geothermal facility there. He's almost 100% energy independent in his own facility there at Chino. And he says, you know, we could buy one of these for $1 million, put it on a barge, tell these communities, just go ahead and store all this stuff, bundle it, put it on Forest Service land, don't put it in your dump, and then we get one of these, we put it on a barge, get some kind of a plastic chipper. You can get all kinds of chippers. Put it through the chipper and then make your own fuel. Now, it sounds crazy, but what is crazier is to put all this stuff in a landfill that is completely maxed out, or to wait for the federal government to come in and say, here's a bazillion dollars. We're going to solve all of your problems here. What I'm suggesting is we've got to be thinking outside the box here. The federal government is looking at this, and I won't say they're closing their eyes to it, but it's a problem that they don't want to have. And it's sure a lot easier to say, that landed on states' shores, so isn't that your problem? My response to them is, well, look up the coast of Alaska. Seems to me that that's U.S. Forest Service land from just about the bottom. Well, you got a reservation down there at Metlakatla, but everywhere you go up until you hit Yakutat, that's U.S. Forest Service. That's the Tongass. And then pretty soon, you're meeting the Chugach National Forest right there. So, yeah, I suppose there is some state land, but most of it is federal land.
Speaking of the coast, and I'll ask this quick because you've been very generous with your time so far, coastal zone management, pro, con?
I would hope that the legislature is going to take that up first thing this session.
Okay.
I don't know that they will. I did not support the proposition as it was written. I think that the legislature had an opportunity to do a better job in drafting that. But we only had one choice on the ballot, yes or no. So I didn't want to put something on the books that we wouldn't be able to amend readily. But I do think that the state needs a coastal zone management plan.
That's it for me.
Right, you've given us quite a bit.
Thank you very much.
Good.
Digest, Senator. Thank you so much.
Good.
Anything
Thanks.
We didn't ask you about?
Yeah.
Oh, I tell you, everyone kind of hinted about it, but you know the situation with Blue Lake. You need this hydro expansion. You have to have it, and yet as a community, that's going to be a tough hit if, in fact, your rates are really increased 30 to 35%, if those numbers are accurate.
Yes.
I don't know many communities that could take on an additional hit to their energy cost like that. And this is hard because it's not like there are opportunities at the federal level where we can kind of swoop in and help out. And I didn't mean to put the monkey on Representative Thomas's back, but it was sure convenient to have him there and remind him what the state contribution will need to be. But I look at these energy solutions for our communities, and I think if there's any way that the state can be a better investment partner so that our communities can be strong and be vibrant because people can afford to live there, then that's as important as anything we have to do. Jobs are important, but you've got to be able to live in your town. And if you don't have energy solutions that work, it's just not happening.